Israel steps up its crackdown in the occupied West Bank, and this amid heightened tensions following a Palestinian operation outside a settlement. The Ain al-Asad military base housing U.S. troops in western Iraq once again comes under a rocket attack. Also in the headlines, Canadian police stepping up their presence in the capital, Ottawa, to counter a new wave of anti-government protests. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Top story this hour, the Israeli military is stepping up a security crackdown in the occupied West Bank, and that after a guard outside a settlement of Ariel was shot dead on Friday. The military says it's conducted new search operations in Palestinian villages. The forces also raided the home village of the suspects behind the incident. The military says that both suspects have been arrested. Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, the armed wing of the Fatah faction, has claimed responsibility for the shooting. The Palestinian group says the attack was in response to the Israeli violations in Al-Quds that injured nearly 300 Palestinians over 2 weeks. The regime forces also killed a Palestinian in an operation that they claim was linked to the hunt for attackers. An event has been held in Russian capital Moscow to mark International Quds Day. Our correspondent Marina Kartanova has filed a report.
The Islamic Republic of Iran hosted an event devoted to commemorating Quds Day as part of Moscow's Ramadan tent, an annual charitable event organized by the Russian Council of Muftis and the Iranian Embassy in Moscow. The International Quds Day, a day of solidarity with the Palestinian people, created by Ayatollah Khamenei, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
It was a wise decision by Imam Khomeini to designate Quds Day. Using the example of the Palestinians, everyone should think about their own people and the equality of their rights. For me, Al-Quds is a symbol of a struggle for justice. That struggle is led by Iranians who have greatly contributed to the triumph of justice across the world.
I have learned from Palestinians that the struggle for justice is of greater value than religious and political doctrines. Quds Day, designated by Imam Khomeini as a day of solidarity with the Palestinians, teaches us the same thing. Palestine shows the power of faith in justice to resist powerful empires that are armed with modern weapons. Palestinian youths are only armed with stones, and all these people are armed with their faith in God.
Christians are not indifferent to the Judaization of Al-Quds. The Zionist leadership of Israel today determines what Muslims and Christians can and cannot do there, where they are allowed or not allowed, as well as the expulsion of Palestinians from their land causes rage and dissent.
Pro-Palestinian activists say making the International Quds Day is even more important today than when it was first declared in 1979, as the Israeli regime has grown more reckless and violent to the people of Palestine.
Iranian ambassador reminded that the issue of Al-Quds is not a private or personal, but international, as thousands of Palestinians were murdered and hundreds of thousands of refugees were forced to flee their homes since the beginning of the formation of Israel.
After the Camp David Treaty, the Zionist regime meant that the Islamic State would no longer resist and that Zionists would continue to expand their occupation. They suddenly ran into the approach of Imam Khomeini. He announced the Day of Al-Quds, mobilized all freedom-loving people who resist oppression against Israel. Muslims and non-Muslims rose up in support of the people of Palestine.
Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Now, two rockets have targeted a base hosting U.S.-led coalition troops in Iraq's western province of Al-Anbar. According to security sources, the projectiles crashed near the Ain al-Asad complex without causing any casualties or damage. A group that calls itself International Resistance says it was behind the attack. U.S. troops and interests in Iraq have frequently come under rocket and drone strikes in recent months. Anti-U.S. sentiment sharply rose in Iraq after January 2020. That's when the U.S. assassinated Iran's anti-terror commander, General Soleimani, and Iraqi commander, al-Mohandes, in a drone strike near Baghdad airport. Within days, the Iraqi parliament passed a bill demanding the expulsion of all foreign troops. The coalition ended its combat mission in the country last December, but roughly 3,500 soldiers remain deployed there in a so-called advisory and training role. An explosion targeting a mosque in the African capital Kabul killed at least 50 worshippers. Daesh terrorist group says its operatives were behind the bloodshed. The attack drew many condemnations, including one from the UN that said attacks against civilians are prohibited under international humanitarian law. Also on Saturday, a car bomb explosion in Kabul left one person dead and three others wounded. Several back-to-back terrorist raids in recent weeks have raised security fears on the eve of the Eid al-Fitr religious occasion that's celebrated at the end of the Muslim fasting months of Ramadan. In the Canadian capital, anti-government protests led by bikers has prompted a heavy police presence. The motorcyclists, dubbing the rally Rolling Thunder, demand their freedoms and criticize government policies. On Saturday, many of the demonstrators carried Canadian flags, a symbol of protest when a rally by truckers against COVID mandates shut down Ottawa for 3 weeks in February. The government eventually invoked extraordinary powers to end what are called the occupation of the city. But authorities saying that they won't allow the bikers to choke the streets this time, and police saying that they're monitoring social media for intimidating behaviors. On Friday night, security forces dismantled what they said was an aggressive and combative crowd. They also made several arrests. The protest action is expected to last through the weekend. The French president says that his country will step up its military and humanitarian support for Ukraine, and that's while Russia is escalating its warnings and criticism. Emmanuel Macron made the announcement in a phone call with his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky. Since Russia launched a war against Ukraine, NATO members and allies have provided billions of dollars in military support to Kyiv. The supplied weapon system range from surface-to-air missiles to heavy artillery and surveillance equipment. The U.S. alone has provided $3 billion in aid. In a vast increase to such aid, the U.S. president also called on Congress to provide $33 billion in mostly military assistance for Ukraine. Moscow says the aid fuels the conflict and also risks direct confrontation between Russia and NATO powers. It's warned any attempt to interfere in the war will be met with a swift response from Moscow. French President Emmanuel Macron's first term was defined by the Yellow Vests. Will the same go for this second term? The anti-government group spent Saturday marching, as usual, knowing that Macron will soon begin five more years in office. Rami Mazahari has more from Paris.
For the first time since the presidential election, the Yellow Vests marched around the country, and most expressed disbelief that Emmanuel Macron was re-elected despite his unprecedented repression of the group.
Frankly, we really don't understand how Macron could be re-elected. We started over purchasing power, and it's worse than ever. I guess people need a knife to their throats to come protest anymore?
They were met by a huge police presence, armed to the teeth. The government continues to intimidate Yellow Vests, but also the average person from rejoining the demonstrations. Intimidating deterrence is also being used to keep journalists from covering the group. In the Yellow Vest demonstration the day before the first round of voting, a journalist from a top French media was fined for allegedly illegally demonstrating while simply reporting on the Yellow Vests.
We'll never stop demanding for citizens' referendums, purchasing power, decent pensions, and the ability to have some money left at the end of the month. After the legislative elections in June and the summer vacation, social unrest will explode this fall.
Thousands of devoted Yellow Vests will continue to turn out every Saturday in Paris alone, and they say others will put their Yellow Vests back on when they see Macron's plans for his second term.
Emmanuel Macron will continue to be the president of the rich and will continue to march. People will eventually recover their good sense and realize the only way to change politics is to join us in the streets.
Nobody expected the Yellow Vests to stop marching. Now we'll see if they can last for the next 5 years.
Global May Day protests will see establishment forces, such as unions and political parties, march nationwide in favor of workers' rights, but also to express major dissatisfaction with the presidential election. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Fighting continues unabated across Ukraine as the war with Russia enters day 67. The attacks are most fierce in the disputed eastern regions, but they also reach as far west as the city of Odessa. Local officials say that a Russian missile strike from Crimea has destroyed the airport runway in the Black Sea port, but no one was harmed. Meantime, in the southern Kherson region, Russia says that Ukrainian shelling of a school, kindergarten, and cemetery has killed and injured civilians. So far, no reaction from Kiev, and in the Russian-held port city of Mariupol, at least 20 civilians, including several children, have managed to leave a besieged steel plant. Ukrainian soldiers and hundreds of civilians are taking shelter at the site. Earlier evacuation efforts have all failed. Islamophobia is on the rise around the world, but the most violent attacks on Muslims are being carried out in the West, such as in the United States. In the meantime, calls are growing for addressing the long-running discrimination hatred against a faith group.
A recent report by the Council on American-Islamic Relations shows anti-Muslim hate crimes have been on the rise in the United States over the past year. In a news conference following the publication of the report, head of the council, Nihad Awad, described Islamophobia in the United States as deep and systematic.
Islamophobia has become mainstream in America. It made its way into the government's institutions and public sphere through laws, policies, political rhetoric, and other manifestations.
Yeah, Islamophobia has been a huge phenomenon in the U.S. since 2001. When the September 11th false flag operation was deliberately used by enemies of Islam to trigger this tidal wave of hatred of Muslims and Islam that led to a series of wars that killed millions of people.
The report shows that the council received over 6,700 complaints nationwide last year, the highest the organization has recorded in 27 years, which represented a 9% increase since the year before. They involved a range of issues, including immigration, travel discrimination, law enforcement, government overreach, hate and bias, custody rights, school incidents, and free speech. Over 2,800 of the incidents were reportedly travel-related. The report cites last year's tensions in Afghanistan and the ensuing immigration crisis as the reason for such a large figure. The report also cites a 28% increase in complaints of hate and bias incidents, including the forcible removal of hijabs, harassment, vandalism, physical assault, and so on.
According to the Council on the American Islamic Relations, more than $100 million was funneled into 26 Islamophobia network groups between 2017 and 2019. An earlier study had put the figure at some $1.5 billion, and that makes Islamophobia a considerably lucrative industry. Who's behind such activities, and what's their endgame?
The Council on the American Islamic Relations describes what it calls the Islamophobia Network as a decentralized group of actors, organizations, and individuals that share extreme anti-Muslim ideologies who lobby to influence government policy and public opinion about Islam. They include politicians, think tanks, scholars, religious groups, and activists that paint a distorted face of Islam and Muslims for political and financial gain. Listed among the top financiers of the Islamophobia Network, according to the Council, are right-wing evangelical groups and pro-Israel organizations, most of whom are members of the Republican Party.
Islamophobia has not only been profitable for Zionists and the military-industrial complex, politicians, but also for these con artists who've created an Islamophobia industry that sells all kinds of books and drums up contributions, often at churches, and gets funded by these billionaire, mostly Zionists.
Back in December, the U.S. House voted for legislation to counter Islamophobia globally. The lawmakers voted along party lines, with the Democrats edging only 7 votes over the 212 that the Republicans had cast. It followed U.S. Representative Lauren Boebert's Islamophobic comments against Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, one of the handful Muslim lawmakers in the U.S., earlier that month.
The Islamophobia industry comes up with all sorts of nonsense and sort of distorted, cherry-picked items from the religious tradition mixed in with all sorts of lies and kinds of grotesque accusations. And then it spams this out in mass. And so it's really polluting the entire infosphere.
The United Nations has called for the adoption of a global strategy that includes defeating all forms of violent ideologies. The question is how to execute such a strategy to make it appealing to all nations and people.
A funeral procession has been held for veteran Iranian movie producer and director Nader Talabzadeh, who passed away at the age of 69 2 days ago. A huge crowd of mourners attended a funeral service in Tehran on Sunday. Talabzadeh is known for his award-winning documentaries and TV productions. He wrote and hosted a talk show dubbed The Secret for Press TV 2. He was also the secretary of International New Horizon Conference, an annual event serving as a platform for criticizing U.S. and Israeli policies. And that led to him being blacklisted and sanctioned by Washington. Talabzadeh died of heart disease complications on the 29th of April. The Sudanese capital, Khartoum, is again the scene of protests against the military rule in that country. The crowds blocked a major road junction in the capital for a sit-in where they brought food to break the Ramadan fast. Security forces have reportedly attempted to break up the rally by firing tear gas and chasing them into side streets. Protesters were marking the third anniversary of the killing of scores of demonstrators in the city. Months-long unrest in Sudan led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir in 2019. A power-sharing deal struck between the military and civilians was scrapped in a coup in October last year. Many officials who worked in the former Bashir regime have been allowed to return to civil service or have been released from jail, intensifying people's anger. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and warm greetings to you, dear listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, May 1st, 2022. I'm Atef Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. Or if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And in advance, I congratulate all our listeners, especially our Muslim listeners, on Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of the blessed month of Ramadan. Congratulations. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card from us, an electronic QSL card from us. So here I appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Najmuddin from India, Roni Hussein from Bangladesh, and Heikki Puran from Finland. Najmuddin, Roni, and Heikki, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And here I do appreciate those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us emails from around the world, including an email from Chris Jensen from Belgium, Igor Belevich from Belarus, one of our old and regular listeners, Mohammad Khaku from the US, one of our regular listeners, and Pekka Lito Poja from Finland. I wish I'm correct in pronouncing in your name, Pekka. Please keep us company until the end of the program. I will be back with these great emails. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and I'm here to read your great emails. So, first of all, Chris Jensen from Belgium has sent us an email. Chris Jensen says, Al-Quds Day is a very important day for me, as this day represents two highly important symbolic issues, Al-Quds regarded from its religious angle and Al-Quds regarded from its political angle. Al-Quds is historically a unique place for humanity because its significance for the three monotheistic Abrahamic religions, including Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. This holy place of worship where the entire humanity adhering to one of the monotheistic religions meets each other in full solidarity and unity has for years been desecrated by the brutal occupying Zionist expansionist political movement, which has no place in true Judaism. It would be a grave mistake to regard Zionism as a representative of true Judaism. The Zionist occupation of the land of Palestine with Al-Quds at his heart makes the place also a symbol for everyone in each corner of the world who is resisting injustice and imperialism. The struggle for Al-Quds is the struggle for freedom, justice, and sincere religious values for every peace-loving human being in the world, regardless of time and place. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Chris Jansen from Belgium, and many thanks for sending us this email regarding the issue of Al-Quds. As you know, Friday, April 29th, marked the World Quds Day, and we saw many rallies and marches supporting the Palestinian cause and against the occupying Zionist regime throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran and around the world. On Friday, April 29th, Iranian people in more than 900 cities and towns participated in rallies on, World Quds Day, supporting Palestine and the oppressed Palestinian people, and also against the, the brutalities of the Zionist regime, the fake regime of Israel. And we saw these rallies around the world. Some of them were held on Saturday and Sunday, because these 2 days are holiday in European countries and, of course, in the United States. As you said, the holy place of worship, the Al-Quds, where the entire humanity adhering to one of the monotheistic religions meet each other in full solidarity and unity, has for years been desecrated by the brutal occupying Zionist expansionist political movement, which actually has no place in true Judaism. Chris Jansen from Belgium, many thanks for sending us this email regarding the World Quds Day. It was great. Thank you. And it was great that you consider the global issues, especially the Palestinian cause, which is one of the important and I think the most important issue in the world. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation, Chris Jansen. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs and, of course, the global developments. And Igor Blevich from Belarus, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Igor says, "I do not know if it is possible to broadcast from Iran to Belarus on medium wave in a daytime, but if it is possible, please broadcast in English and Russian to Belarus. Simply at a daytime, it is more suitable to listen than in the late evening. I want to sleep at late evening and cannot often listen then. Try to understand my situation." Igor Blevich from Belarus, salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, from Tehran, and from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for sending us this email. So this is an idea, this is an opinion. So you can't, listen to IRIB English Radio and this program, as you said, late evening. My colleagues, of course, will think about it and will speculate, and then we will tell you if there is a time suitable to listen for you, of course. Igor Belevich from Belarus. Thank you for telling us your opinion about this situation. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, Igor. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. So after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Stay with me. Welcome back. Mohammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners from the U.S., has sent us an email regarding the World Quds Day and the issue of Palestine. Mohammad says, "In my opinion, about a million messages and emails have to be sent to newspapers and mass media around the world to highlight the occupation of Palestine. I participate in Quds rallies so that I can say I tried to inform Muslim Ummah of the atrocities of the Zionist regime in Palestine. Attending such rallies, writing letters to editors and imams delivering sermons on last Friday of Ramadan scared the reactionary pro-Israel Arab rulers and the Western Zionist masters. Al-Quds is at the very heart of Islam and the Muslim Ummah. Its status at any given time reflects the general health of the entire body of the Muslims. Muslims are like one body. If one limb hurts, then the whole body hurts. And so does the Muslim Ummah feel the pain with injustice. Ramadan must be seen primarily as the month of a struggle and jihad. It becomes incumbent upon all Muslims to share the pain and suffering just like one body in the face of injustices. Well, salam and warm greetings from Iran to you, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S., and many thanks. Please accept our, gratitudes and appreciations for sending us this email regarding the issue of World Quds Day and the issue of Palestine. As you said, Al-Quds is at the very heart of Islam and Muslim Ummah. Its status at any given time reflects the general health of the entire body of Muslims. So we, in the media, everybody in the world, whether in the US, in Europe, in Arab countries, in Iran, in the West Asia region, in the North America, North Africa region, in every part of the world, should care about the Palestinian cause, because it's not just a Muslim issue, because it's a human issue. As you said, because these innocent people, these defenseless people are being hurt by the Western Zionist, as you said, pro-Israel Arab rulers. They are hurt by these people, by the atrocities that these pro-Israel Arab rulers and the Western Zionist masters and the rulers of the fake regime of Israel perpetuate against these innocent people, these defenseless people. So everybody should care. It's not just a Muslim issue. Everybody should care about Palestine. So, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S., it's great that you participate in World Quds Day rallies. And, of course, you have participated. On Friday, April 29th, you participated in the rallies. And, of course, you again participate in such rallies in support of Palestine and against the fake regime of Israel. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much again for sending this email. Please write to us soon and tell us your opinion about IRB English radio programs and, of course, your opinion about world developments. After a short break, I will be back with an email from Finland from Pekka Litopoja. So welcome back. Pekka from Finland has sent us an email. Pekka says, "Dear friends at IRAB English Radio, I listened to your program a few days ago here in Kuvola in southern Finland. Reception of your program was quite good. I would be very happy if you could verify that. I have heard right, and this signal was originally from your station transmitter. I'm 66 years old and have had this hobby since I was 12 years old. Now I am retired and I have started again this hobby. I have these reception confirmations from 60 countries now. I have never collected any from your country, but I hope that it will be possible to have one of your radio. I wish you all the best and hope that your transmission will be heard even further than Finland. With best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Pekka from Finland. Thank you very much for sending us this email. It seems that you are a new listener from Finland. That's great. So Pekka, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much for sending us this email. We hope that this mutual relationship continue. So stay our listener and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best, Pekka. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So again, in advance, I congratulate all our listeners, especially our Muslim listeners, on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of the blessed month of Ramadan. Congratulations, everybody. So here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with your radio, IRIB English Radio. Keep in touch with your program, Listeners Special. Have a good time. God bless you all.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Two Palestinian fighters have killed an Israeli guard. The military wing of Fatah Party claimed responsibility. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian youth in the town of Azoun in the occupied West Bank. Violence and deaths are continuing in the occupied Palestinian territories, but has it reached a point that Palestinians will come out en masse? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at where Palestinians stand and how Israel has been weakened due to multiple security breaches. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Founder of If Americans Knew, Allison Weir, joins us from Sacramento. Also joining us, Palestinian human rights advocate Amal Wahdan joins us from occupied Ramallah.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Alison Weir, I will start first with you. You're having an Israeli security guard, as we just reported, to have been killed near the Ariel settlements in the West Bank. And it has a claim, an entity that claimed the responsibility, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the military wing of Fatah Party. And this comes on the heels of multiple violations that have happened at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the desecration of that holy site in as many days. We've lost count at this point. I think it's been maybe 2 weeks in a row, or even longer. How do you view the security situation based on this latest attack?
Well, it's extremely tragic. The violence has escalated. A number of Palestinians have been killed. A young man was just killed earlier today, 28 years old, Palestinian man. Another was killed on the 27th, an 18-year-old. On the 26th, a 20-year-old was killed. On the 18th, an 18-year-old was killed. On April 15th, a 17-year-old was killed. So the violence is escalating. Tragically, when Palestinians get killed, then eventually some Israelis also get killed. The violence at Al-Aqsa Mosque, a very holy place, and an area that's holy to really all three religions that began in that area, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. That's a very holy place for all of them, but unfortunately Israeli forces control the area, and rather than making an international area for everyone to go and worship equally and freely, it's constricting the ability for Palestinians to worship at their own very holy area.
Well, that's, of course, very unfortunate, but in the way that they have exercised what they call law and order, Amal Wahdan, they've actually give it a name, but it's been anything but that. We're looking at this particular attack, again, attributed to the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and it even happened on Al-Quds Day, and the types of violence that has occurred in the past weeks, in many instances, it was very heavy-handed. Why do you think Israel has chosen a heavy-handed approach towards Palestinians, at least in the holy month of Ramadan, at the Al-Aqsa Mosque?
It seems to be
This is for Amal Wahdan. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Amal Wahdan.
Yes. Hi, Alison. This is some sort of game between politics and security. Bennett was trying to show a very tough hand on the Palestinians, using all security apparatus to hit hard on the Palestinians to gain some political gains. But the thing is, they don't learn from history. They don't learn from the previous government. The five governments that were there in the last 2 years have been facing the same thing. It is escalating riots, the Palestinian riots, the Palestinian uprising is rising against the Israeli security forces and the occupation, but it has grounds there. I mean, these guys in Salfit who attacked the security guard in Ariel settlement, they're defending their lands. Their lands was confiscated by the Israeli occupation tens of years back. So the thing is, whenever the Israelis escalate their tough hands against the Palestinians naturally will react. They're not going to turn the other cheek for the occupation. And resistance in all forms is something has legitimacy in it. Even in international law and human rights laws, from the beginning, this occupation is against international law, against human rights law, against the convention of the UN. So it is very natural that the Palestinians will react. Israel is advanced in its technology, in its killing and lethal weapons, and that has been used against the Palestinians. And casualties are, if we want to go to ratios, it's 5-1 or 10-1. So the only reason for this is the occupation. If the occupation is over, I think nobody is going to be killed. If this apartheid regime is over, then people can live in peace.
Well, our guests there talked about international law, Alison Weir, and one of the things that is enshrined in international law is the fact that you have the right to resist. Resistance is part of that. But Israel turns around and says, that is not resistance, that is terrorism in full display. Israel does take the narrative and twist it in order to portray it in its favor. The question is, are people buying it? I mean, at this point, how do you view it? In terms of the way that Palestinian plight, especially coming off the heels of Al-Quds Day, has been highlighted to the point and degree that it has?
Well, I think many people in the United States are still taken in by it, but a growing number are not. You know, many of us remember that our own revolution against the British colonists back in 1776 used muskets and violence. It's also important to remember, of course, as I'm sure many of your viewers do, but most Americans don't know, is that Palestinians also do attempt to use nonviolent resistance all the time. Every week, every day, there are marches against Israeli occupation, and you know that's used. There was a massive march in Gaza that lasted a year and a half. Every week, there's nonviolence. So they try everything, and of course, some of them will respond with violence, which is understandable and expected. I sometimes wonder, it does appear to me that sometimes Israeli forces are brutal specifically because they want to trigger violence in response to their violence, and then they will blame that violence and say they're responding to it. This is a pattern we see again and again and again. I agree that the occupation that began really in when Israel was created through ethnic cleansing in 1948, that's the problem. You know, these were groups that had a tradition of getting along. Christians, Muslims, and Jews had lived in Palestine for centuries without violence. It only changed when the Zionist movement began in Europe and then in the United States in the late 1800s, and now has continued through today.
Let's roll back to last year when there was an actual war that happened, and it was after the month of Ramadan or thereabouts, when you had almost the same things happen, maybe not in the intensity that it did this year. And Israel decided last year, Amal Wahdan, to attack the Gaza Strip. But it did not do it this year. There was plenty of, on Israel's side, the desecration of the mosque, along with obviously what I just mentioned about the way they handle Palestinians. And of course, the warnings did come, which we're going to get into the most recent warning that came just hours ago. Some are deducting that that's because Israel is actually in a weakened state, that it feels threatened security-wise, and attributing a lot of that because of the rockets that made it through their so-called Iron Dome system. So if that's the case, if you agree, then why does it continue with what it's doing to with the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque?
I agree. I totally agree. They were scared. You know, 250,000 people managed to cross the security checkposts and the military checkposts surrounding Jerusalem. And by the way, Jerusalem is suffocated by the settlements and the checkposts. And us, we cannot go from the West Bank. We cannot go to Jerusalem, to Al-Aqsa, or to the Church of Sepulchre. Gazans can't leave Gaza. Gazans are under siege for over 15 years now. And nobody is budging. Nobody is talking about international law or human rights law. And these young men who attacked the security guard at Ariel settlement, they haven't been in Jerusalem. I'm sure that they haven't been in Jerusalem. They haven't seen the sea. So It went peacefully, though there was a demonstration within Al-Aqsa space. Didn't go out, but it was inside. They raised the flag, they hanged the flag over Al-Aqsa, but they didn't have any confrontation because there was a political decision. The government decided that they don't have to go with confrontations because they're going to get it. They're going to face another Jerusalem sword, another May 11th of last year. So they decided that they want to be calm. Yesterday, it was less than the day before, 160,000 people, which is also very good. Some people climbed the walls in order to get to Al-Aqsa because they weren't allowed through the regular military check roads. So, of course, whenever there is politics involved, whenever there is interest for the leaders, for the politicians in the government, for Bennett and his gang, of course, they will try to calm down because they don't want to pay a high price, taking into consideration that also our people in 1948 are an integrated part of the Palestinian sure. people, and they will respond from their side, and that's what the government doesn't want, what the security apparatus doesn't want. This is like a ticking bomb inside the apartheid regime. So they don't want also to trigger any reactions, any violent reactions against their measures, harsh measures and oppression.
Mm-hmm. When we started, when I asked the first question, Alison Weir, and you started talking about the different incidents that were involved with violence and deaths that happened as a result of either a raid, I'm not too sure the ones that you cited, I couldn't help but come back to you now and point and have the fact being pointed to how, based on numerous websites, one of the ones that is pretty prominent, the PCHR, Palestinian Center for Human Rights, daily violations that happen in the occupied territories, which includes injuries, which includes deaths, which includes destruction of properties, in pretty extensive. Any day of the week, you can tune into any one of these websites, and it cites all of these violations that are taking place, which unfortunately also points to civilian lives being taken. When we take a look at that, it really puts this into another light, this whole occupation, because many maybe do not realize that this is happening on a daily basis. So then, what can be done here? Where can Palestinians turn to?
That's hard to know. They've tried everything. They tried to nonviolence. They use different types of resistance. They have endured decade after decade after decade of oppression, and yet every day these things go on. Just looking at the last 2 days, Israeli soldiers have abducted Palestinians from Ramallah. They've attacked Palestinian farmers and fishermen in Gaza. Yesterday, they attacked Palestinian protesters in Beta and Beit Ajan that are in different parts of the West Bank, the northern part of the West Bank also. They've abducted Palestinians from Jerusalem. They injured dozens of Palestinians in a town east of Qalqilya in the West Bank. So what people need to be aware of, especially Americans, because we need to know that it is our government that is using our tax money, $10 million per day, that Israel uses to oppress Palestinians day after day, week after week, year after year. And yet Americans only get a very filtered reporting about what's actually going on there and think, well, yes, maybe every few years Israel might invade Gaza. No, they invade Gaza and the West Bank every day. Their forces are there beating people, abducting people, every so often killing people. This is just largely unknown. I think that the world needs to be more aware of the oppression Palestinians are enduring, and all of us need to do what we can to speak out and to try to stop this injustice that then endangers the whole world. Israeli actions have destabilized the Middle East for decades. They've caused the rise of extremism throughout the Middle East that would not have been there and was not there previously, that then endangers Americans and Europeans as well. This is a worldwide phenomenon that's extremely dangerous to everybody.
A quick question, Allison Weir. How long you've been associated with If Americans Knew?
I started it about 22 years ago.
Okay, so 22 years just based on that. And then, Amal Wahdan, you look like somebody, obviously, who is well aware. You can tell us perhaps how many years or even longer you have witnessed what is happening. The reason why I'm bringing these two facts and putting it together is with the tone of desperation underlying what Allison Weir said there. Imagine a Palestinian, how they feel, if from the outside, where Allison Weir said, they've exhausted all avenues. So if that's the case, and you're a Palestinian in the occupied territories, you're over the edge, which is why we're seeing perhaps incidents like what happened today, where you had the two from the fighters from the Fatah party do what they did to that Israeli guard, and of course other incidents that happen from the Palestinian sides. Has it reached a point where we're looking at the possibility of a third Intifada breaking out, maybe?
Well, it is accumulating, actually. The contradiction is rising between the occupiers and the occupied, the colonizers and the colonized. And this apartheid regime doesn't, or the leaders of this apartheid regime, they don't get it that this is the last occupation on Earth. Of course, we have the U.S. northern of Syria. We have the U.S. South of Yemen in Aden. Now what's going on in Eastern Europe. They're everywhere, actually. If it's not military, they're doing it by their intelligence. So whenever there is an occupation, it's natural to have resistance to this occupation. And what is happening in the with the Palestinians, young and young men, children, old men, old women, we can see them. We can see them all. We meet them in the streets. We meet them in the demonstrations. Everybody is fed up with this occupation, with this apartheid regime. And it's just like South Africa. How come the international community were listening to what was going on in South Africa, and all of a sudden they've decided that they have enough, and this white regime, this apartheid white regime, has to be dismantled. And that's what we are calling for. What we are calling for, if we want peace in this area, in mm-hmm. this part of the world, this occupation has to be dismantled. This apartheid regime has to be dismantled. If the three religions want to live together peacefully, sure, there is a way. And this is by ending colonization, ending the occupation in all of Palestine from 1948 to 1967. It's one country, and it cannot be divided. And it happened through 75 years now. Oslo Accords lasted for 28, now 29 almost years back, and they did not accomplish anything. Why? Because the Israeli side decided going on with their Zionist project. They don't want peace. They want it all. And what they did with the
Israel is obviously showing that it's not going to really settle for anything less than having it all, to put it in your words. And also, if we want to take a look at the Oslo Accords, that didn't even yield the promises that it had for the Palestinians. You said that the U.S. is, I want to use the word bankroll, but I'm going to use it, bankrolling Israel in a sense, at the tune of, what, $10 million a day, I think is what you said. We know Israel's not going to budge, so we're going to look to the U.S. and any hopes there. It seems, and it seems, before, since we're running out of time, I'm going to merge this question, this fact, into this question also, that the U.S. has taken the formalization of Arab countries with Israel and has swapped that for any peace talks, were they to even happen. It seems like that's the route they have chosen to go, and of course the way that they are bankrolling Israel.
Yes. Before we leave, I want to quickly, though, just honor a man who just passed away, an Iranian brilliant filmmaker and individual of great compassion and principle.
Yeah.
His name was Nader Talabzadeh. He just passed away, I believe it was last night.